भगवते वासुदेवाय। हरे कृष्ण। So before I begin, I would seek the permission of the senior Vaishnavas and all the assembled Vaishnav devotees. And actually, I don't feel very much qualified to be here, but as a matter of service, since I've been told to, I'll try to do what little I can within my limited capacity. Please forgive me for any shortcomings. Hare Krishna. So today, continuing the ongoing Bhagavad Gita lectures which have been started in the temple from the last Wednesday, today, first chapter, verse number 20 to 26, we are supposed to be doing. So, verse number 20. Atha vyavasthitan drishtva. Dhartarashtran kapidvajah. प्रवृत्ते शास्त्र संपाते धनुर्उद्यम्य पांडवः ऋषिकेशं तदा वाक्यं इदं आहमहीपते। ट्रांसलेशन एंड पर्पट बाय हिज डिवाइन ग्रेस एसी भक्तिवेदांत स्वामी श्रील प्रभुपाद। ट्रांसलेशन। At that time, Arjun, the son of Pandu, seated in the chariot bearing the flag marked with Hanuman, took up his bow and prepared to shoot his arrows. O king, after looking at the sons of Dhritarashtra drawn in military array, Arjun then spoke to Lord Krishna these words. Purport. The battle was just about to begin. It is understood from the above statement that the sons of Dhritarashtra were more or less disheartened by the unexpected arrangement of military force by the Pandavas, who were guided by the direct instructions of Lord Krishna on the battlefield. The emblem of Hanuman on the flag of Arjun is another sign of victory, because Hanuman cooperated with Lord Ram in the battle between Ram and Ravan, and Lord Ram emerged victorious. Now, both Ram and Hanuman were present on the chariot of Arjun to help him. Lord Krishna is Ram himself, and wherever Lord Ram is, his eternal servitor Hanuman and his eternal consort Sita, the goddess of fortune, are present. Therefore, Arjun had no cause to fear any enemies whatsoever, and above all, the Lord of the senses, Lord Krishna, was personally present to give him direction. Thus, all good counsel was available to Arjun in the matter of executing the battle. In such auspicious conditions arranged by the Lord for his eternal devotee lay the signs of assured victory. Hare Krishna. So we are in the first chapter, and actually in trying to understand Bhagavad Gita, it is a very simple approach. Bhagavad Gita is like a question and answer, because the very first shloka of Bhagavad Gita is very famous, everybody knows. It begins with a question by Dhritarashtra, Dhritarashtra Vacha. So, he asked a question to Sanjay. Dharma kshetre kuru kshetre mama veta yujutsva pandava mamakashchaiva kim kuruvata sanjayaha. It starts with a question. And actually, if you analyze, you go to the last verse of Bhagavad Gita. It has 700 shlokas. This is the first verse. And the last verse of Bhagavad Gita is the answer by Sanjay. It says, Yatra Yogeshwara Krishna Yatra Partho Dhanurdharah Tatra Shrir Vijaya Bhutir Dhruva Nitir Matir Mamam. So there is a question, first shlok, there is an answer, last shlok. Actually it is one straight question and one straight answer. Question is, arrayed on the battlefield of Kurukshetra, Dharmakshetra, my sons and the sons of Pandu, what are they about to do? This is the question. And Sanjaya gives a clear cut answer. Wherever there is Krishna and his faithful servant Arjun, Dhanurdhar, one who performs his duty on the instructions of the Lord, victory is assured there. In short, very crystal clear, he is telling Dhritarashtra, your sons are not going to be victorious. They are on the side of Adharma, and Arjun is under the protection and shelter of Lord Shri Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So victory is his. So if you want to understand Bhagavad Gita, these two verses are enough. And what is there in between, 698 verses remaining, is a detailed explanation of the same. And the central point of Bhagavad Gita is given in the very central verse of Bhagavad Gita. Chapter 9th, last verse. Manmana bhava mat bhakto matya jimam namaskuru mame vaishyasi satyam te pratijane priyosime. So this is the message of Bhagavad Gita if one wants to understand crystal clear. Of course, we also have Sarva Dharman Parityaje, but that can be taken as supplementary, complementary. So one has to become a devotee of Lord Krishna. If one has read Bhagavad Gita and one has become a devotee of Lord Krishna, then he has understood the Gita. If one is reading Bhagavad Gita but is far from appreciating Krishna or trying to become, take to the process of becoming his devotee, then he is far from the target. That means he has not understood Gita. So the central character of Bhagavad Gita is Krishna. Trying to understand and surrender to Krishna is the purpose of reading Bhagavad Gita. Otherwise, it serves only an academic purpose. So here, in this particular verse, if you try to understand in the background of this chapter, the first chapter, it is actually setting the scene for the Mahabharata war. And Mahabharata war corresponds to the struggle in our life. So, both the Kurus and Pandavas are arrayed in battle formation. Sanjaya describes Duryodhan's pep talk to Dronacharya. So now Dhritarashtra has asked the question and Sanjaya has begun to give him the answer. So he is describing what is happening over there, and Drona and Duryodhan is enlisting the names of the great warriors on both sides, and Duryodhan is confident of his own victory. Duryodhan is actually going by material calculation. He says Bhishma is superior to Bhima. He does not see the presence of Krishna on the Pandava side. Besides, the blowing of the conch shells before a war, both the parties, they blow the conch shells. The Kauravas, when they blow the conch shells, as has been described in the earlier verses, which we have already done, there is a tumultuous sound. Shor mach gaya, that's what is happening. Huge sound. It is said, empty vessels make more noise. So, but when the Pandavas are blowing their conch, what is happening? It instills fear in the hearts of the Kauravas. This is the effect of transcendental noise. Transcendental voice. The force of the Pandavas' conch shell is transcendental. It goes beyond the material platform. The Pandavas actually represent purity because they are under the protection and shelter of Krishna. Even when an ordinary ritual is performed, the first verse which is generally quoted is Om apavitra pavitrova sarvavastam gatopeva yasmaret pundari kaksham sabakhya abhyantara shuchihi. Pavitra means pure. So, Om apavitra pavitrova, whether one is pure or impure, in whatever state one is, just by remembering the lotus-eyed Lord Shri Krishna, then what happens? All auspiciousness is immediately achieved. All purity is immediately achieved. So, and that personification of purity, Krishna, is the one who is guiding the Pandavas, and the Pandavas are under his shelter. So they have purity on their side. So that is the delivering force. It is not a material sound. It is spiritual purity. It is an indication of the outcome of the battle. the very first opening scene of the battle is an indication of the outcome of the battle as to where victory is going to lie. In fact, the entire first chapter, if you analyze carefully, different places a hint is given again and again, who is going to be victorious. In this very verse, which we have done just now, it is explained by Gurujan Prabhu in his elaboration that this Mahabharat battle is not an ordinary battle. He is giving an example of the war that took place in Vietnam, where the American government forced students to go and fight. They were not Kshatriyas. That the result of that was frustration, and it was not a real war as such. But this was a royal battle. What makes the Mahabharata so special? Only the presence of Lord Krishna. That makes all the difference. Otherwise, it can become a mundane battle. The presence of the Lord lends purity, force to everything and auspiciousness to everything. Even when the Lord is fighting, it is auspicious. There is nothing inauspicious about the Lord, His activities, His message, His form, His name, His paraphernalia, His associates. Nothing. Everything is auspicious. He is all auspicious. His actions are perfect. His direction is perfect. And the message that He gives is perfect and eternal. Bhagavad Gita is the message which the Lord has given to all of us. In this verse, the very first time mention is made of Lord Shri Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita. Shri Shri Radha Gopinath Bhagwan Ki, Shri Gopal, Shri Shri Gaur Nitai Ki. Up to now, Lord Krishna has not been introduced in the scene, though he was very much there on the battlefield. The discussion was between Dhritarashtra, Sanjay, the names of the various warriors were given, so many other things were mentioned. But right now, for the first time, the name of Lord Krishna has been mentioned as Rishikesha. Arjuna is addressing him. He is addressed as Rishikesha, described as Rishikesha here. Up to now, the other names are there. The hearts of the Kauravas were shattered by the sound of the conch shells, and they were surprised by the military arrangement of the Pandavas, guided by the personal instructions of Lord Krishna. One very important feature to be noted in this verse, as has been given in the purport, is Hanumanji was present on Arjuna's flag. Actually, Prabhupada has elaborated in the purport very nicely. What does this signify? He says, Lord Ram and Krishna are non-different. They are one and the same. And Hanumanji is, and Krishna is riding on the chariot. It is non-different from Lord Ram riding on the chariot. And Hanumanji, his eternal faithful servitor, is there in the form of the emblem on the flag. The eternal servitor. So this combination of Lord Ram and Hanumanji is a victorious combination. Ram killed Ravan and won the battle. Where Ram is there, Sita also is there. She is the consort of Lord Ram. She is the goddess of fortune. All good fortune is therefore on Arjuna's side. This is an indication of the outcome of the battle. The next point that is of significance here is, Gurujan Prabhu in his commentary has mentioned, he has cited a beautiful story that took place in the pastimes of Mahabharata. Before the war, Arjuna actually went to the celestial world to gain arsenal, that is, to gain weapons to fight the war. So he actually went to Lord Shiva and he got the famous Gandiva bow from there. But in the meanwhile, it was Bhim who was going over the Badrikashram. It is a place where normally normal mortals cannot go. But what happened was, Draupadi was there and a beautiful 100-petaled lotus flower came into the river there. Mandakini River. And she was so attracted by that. So she said that, I would like to offer this flower to Yudhishthir. So can you get me some more flowers? So Bhim took his mace and he charged up the Badrikashram hill. As he was going, he went with great force, roaring and making great sound, frightening away the animals, uprooting trees on his path. So as he was going, what happened was, there was an old monkey sitting on the path. And the monkey would not move. Now it is against Vaishnava etiquette to cross a person and go over. So Bhim was getting frustrated and he was getting irritated. So he told, monkey, please move, let me go. Monkey said, why are you in such a hurry? Why are you creating so much of a fuss here, so much of a ruckus? You are disturbing the whole environment. Just sit down and eat some fruits. So Bhim's objective was different. He was in no mood to sit and eat fruits. So the monkey just saw that and the monkey said, okay, I am an old monkey, I am very tired. I am not able to move by myself. You can do one thing, if you want to go so badly and so urgently, just lift my tail and put it aside and you can go. The path is clear for you. Now Bhim with all his might, you know Bhim has got the strength of 1,000 elephants. But Bhim with all his might, he tried to lift the tail of the monkey and he was unsuccessful. He just looked up. He thought, oh, this doesn't seem to be an ordinary monkey. He just looked up and he said, who are you? And then Hanumanji revealed his true identity. They embraced each other. They were very glad because who were they actually? They were brothers. Both were Pamanputra. Bhim is Vayuputra and Hanumanji is also Vayuputra. So they were actually brothers. So they exchanged greetings. They were very happy. When two Vaishnavas meet, it is always a very happy union. So it was like that. And then Hanumanji gave this benediction to Bhim. He said, when the battle of Mahabharata is fought, I will be there personally riding in the form of my emblem on the flag. And when you utter your war cries on the battlefield, I will join your battle cry and I will shatter the hearts of your enemies. And victory and kingdom is assured for you. This again is a foregone conclusion as to what is going to be the outcome of the battle. So this way, Hanumanji's emblem on the chariot that Arjun was riding has got a great significance. So when we go to the next verse, I'll just read the translation of this verse. Arjun said, O infallible one, please draw my chariot between the two armies so that I may see those present here who desire to fight and with whom I must contend in this great trial of arms. This is actually two verses, 21 and 22, together. Here Krishna is addressed as Achyuta. Senayor upayor madhye ratham sthapayame chuta. Yavad etan nirikshaham yodu kamanavasthitan. Kairmaya sahayodhavyam asmin rana samudhyame. So here as you see, Arjuna is addressing Lord Shri Krishna as Achyuta. So what is the significance of this name? Achyuta means infallible, the one who cannot fall down. Actually, it's very interesting to note here that the position that Lord Krishna has taken is one of Sarathi. Sarathi means chariot driver. Actually, we should appreciate this in a very significant way. One may think, okay, it may be just like a taxi driver. It is not like that. It's so different. Because when a warrior is entering the war field and he is riding on his chariot, actually the position is he is on a higher platform and the charioteer is sitting on a lower platform. Actually, the shoulder of the charioteer is coming near the feet of the warrior. And there is so much of noise on the battlefield that the warrior who is on the chariot when he wants to give some instructions as to where to turn the chariot, he cannot shout and give the instruction. There is so much of sound around that his voice will not reach. Besides, just like a driver, his eyes has to be always fixed on the road. For a warrior, his eyes has to be always fixed on the enemy. He cannot take his eyes off the enemy even for a second. And his full concentration must be on the enemy and the target where he is going to shoot his arrows. So how does he indicate to the chariot driver? He actually kicks him on the shoulder. He kicks him on the shoulder with his right feet or left feet, indicating where he wants to go. And for stopping and for speeding up, he may even kick him on the head. There may be different signals in that way. So now you can appreciate what is the meaning of being the Sarathi, taking this kind of a position for a charioteer. And Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is controlling all the three worlds, all the 14 planetary systems, the entire creation, the very source of Vishnu, the very source of the three Gunavatars, Brahma, Vishnu, Mahesh, he is the source of everything, Sarva Karana Karanam. He has taken such a menial position just to serve his dear devotee Arjun. And here, when Arjun is addressing Krishna as Achyuta, it actually signifies that though, my Lord, you have taken such a humble and menial position of a charioteer, of a sarathi, of a chariot driver, actually your position is always unchanged. You are still the Supreme Personality of Godhead and I am still your eternal servitor. This is the significance of the use of the word Achyuta over here. That he says that in whatever circumstances you may be, your position is always infallible. It never changes. Arjuna specifically addresses Krishna here as Achyuta. He is ever conscious of Krishna's superior position. That is the greatness of Achyuta, of Arjuna, who is a pure devotee. Just because he has taken a humble position, he does not consider himself to be superior. He is ever conscious of Krishna's superior position. The sweetness of the relationship between the Lord and his devotees is what is brought out in this particular pastime of the Lord. And therefore the Lord is known as Bhakta Vatsal. The Lord likes to be ordered by his devotee. This is the reciprocation of the Lord. If the devotee wants to serve the Lord is not there simply to accept his service and remain holding his superior position. The Lord immediately takes a very humble position and he reciprocates by serving the devotee in return. This is the sweetness of the relationship between the Lord and his devotees. So why does Arjuna not just begin to shoot the arrows, but asks to be shown those who are desirous of fighting? Because he is a pure devotee, he was unhappy to kill them. Otherwise, he could have just started shooting the arrows. He knows Krishna is on his side, justice is on his side, he is going to be victorious, he is fully confident, he's got a prowess, he's got the benediction, he's got the Gandiva bow, and so many things are on his side, but yet this shows the softness of the heart of a devotee. He is not eager to kill. He doesn't want to kill. And here is a hint of Arjuna's reluctance to fight as the further shlokas are going to unfold. The next verse 23. The translation. Let me see those who have come here to fight, wishing to please the evil-minded son of Dhritarashtra. This is what Arjuna continues to say. Actually, this takes us to an episode that took place before the war. Before the war, both were preparing for the fight. Both the parties. So both Arjun and Duryodhan, they approached Lord Krishna in Dwarka. And both are approaching the Lord and they are asking for favors. So Arjuna is sitting at the feet of the Lord and Duryodhan is sitting at the head of the Lord. The Lord is asleep. They are waiting for him to wake up. So Duryodhan places himself very strategically near the head of the Lord, thinking that as soon as he opens his eyes, he will see me. So I will get the first chance, first preference. So I can take what is best. So I will not lose the advantage. But Arjun, taking a very humble position, sits at the feet of the Lord. But it so happens that the Lord, when he opens his eyes straight go to Arjun. And so he asks, what has brought you here? What can I do for you? How can I serve you? Duryodhana is instant to point out, I came first. So Arjun immediately says, okay, you can please satisfy Duryodhana first. This is Vaishnava etiquette and behavior. So Duryodhana immediately seizes the opportunity and he says that, you know, the war is about to commence and I have come to ask for your favor. So Lord says, what do you want? I have one condition. I will not fight. And in that case, what do you want? So Duryodhana says, I will take your army. He calculates material calculation. What is the use of a person who is not going to fight? It is a war. If I have such a big army, the Narayani Sena, that I am sure of victory. It's a huge army, very prestigious army. So he says, well, and then he is very happy that he has consolidated his advantage. And there is Arjun. So Arjun says, my Lord, you need not fight, but it is enough if you are with me. This is the mood of a devotee. And the devotee always wants the shelter of the Lord. The devotee knows that he is fully protected if the Lord favors him. That is all. He doesn't try to win on his merit. Devotee does not count his merit. Devotee only seeks the favor of the Lord. So this is a beautiful point that this story brings out. So here was Arjun. He was confident of his victory because Krishna was on his side. But still he says, let me just estimate the strength of the opponents. So you please take the chariot and place it in between the two armies. This is the request that Arjun is making. So let's go to the verse, next verse. Sanjay said, O descendant of Bharata, having thus been addressed by Arjun, Lord Krishna drew up the fine chariot in the midst of the armies of both parties. Evamuk Sanjayo vacha, evamuktva rishikesho gudakeshena Bharata, senayorubayor madhye sthapayitva rathottamam. In this purport, the word gudakesh has been very significantly explained. Gudaka means, Arjun is addressed as gudakesh. So gudaka means sleep. So one who conquers his sleep is the meaning of the word gudakesh. Sleep also means ignorance. Tamogun. So therefore one who conquers ignorance is gudakesh. A devotee like Arjun is not ignorant. Simply by thinking of Krishna, one conquers sleep and ignorance. That is Krishna consciousness. That is the state of samadhi. Arjun was 24 hours Krishna conscious. That was his great merit. That is his lesson to all of us. And similarly, even in the story of Ramayana, Lakshmanji, when he goes to the forest, for 14 years, he is guarding Lord Ram and Sita, Mother Sita. He doesn't sleep a wink. 14 years he doesn't sleep one wink. Why? He is completely attentive to the service of his Lord. This is the meaning of gudakesh. Krishna is Rishikesh. And he knows Arjun's mind. Rishikesh means Rishika Isha. Rishika means senses. Isha means controller. So one who controls the senses. Now when in the analogy of the body and the mind and intelligence, it is explained, the senses are like the 5 horses, mind is like the reins, intelligence is like the charioteer, and the soul is the rider on the chariot, and this entire body is like the chariot. So the mind is the controller of the senses, the reins which control the horses. So the mind is the controller of the senses. In the day-to-day activity also it is so. The mind can, the senses can be controlled by the mind. Indriyani parani ahur indrebhya param mana manasastu param buddhir yo buddhir paratastu sah. So this is the hierarchy within the body. The senses, then the mind, then the intelligence, and above that is the soul. This is the hierarchy of control. So the senses are difficult to control, but with the mind they can be controlled. So Rishikesha means the one who controls the senses. The mind is the one that controls the senses. So it is also explained that since Krishna is Rishikesh, Arjuna, he knows the mind of Arjuna. So he says, you are my aunt's son, sister of Vasudev, Kunti. And therefore, I am driving your chariot. This is actually explained as a further detail. It's not direct translation of the shloka. So when Krishna said, behold the Kurus, he jokingly implied, what's the use of saying the Kurus? Because Arjuna is telling, take me to the center of the battlefield and let me see the Kurus who are arrayed in battle formation, who want to actually fight with me. So here, a little bit of joking repartee is going on between the Lord and the devotee. The Lord says that, what is the use of seeing the Kurus? What are you going to gain by that? So this is the 25th verse, which we were describing. And the translation of this 25th verse is, in the presence of Bhishma, Drona and all other chieftains of the world, the Lord said, just behold Partha, all the Kurus assembled over here. So in this particular verse, we understand that, I think I would like to read it from this particular thing, it will be more elaborate here. In the presence of Bhishma, Drona and all other chieftains of the world, the Lord said, just behold Partha, all the Kurus are assembled here. Hundreds of millions of warriors were in the Kuru armies. Yet Krishna drove Arjuna's chariot directly before Bhishma and Drona. In that way, this is known as Bhishma, Drona, Pramukhataha. In that way, Krishna forced Arjuna to see that both his grandfather and his Guru were determined to oppose him in battle. Krishna thus drew out Arjuna's familial attachment so that he could speak Bhagavad Gita. Krishna was teasing Arjuna. It is only Kurus on both sides who are assembled. Srila Baldev Vidyabhushan adds this explanation of Krishna's words. Because you are the son of my father's sister, I am going to serve as your chariot driver. But now you are about to abandon your desire to fight. Thus Krishna jokingly implied, what's the use of looking at the enemy's army? In this way, Krishna affirmed the thoughts in Arjuna's mind. Sanjay describes this scene to Dhritarashtra and then mentions family members and others whom Arjuna sees before him. So, Bhurijan Prabhu in this particular description very clearly brings out that Krishna drew out Arjuna's familial attachment so that he could speak Bhagavad Gita. This is an important point in this verse. So, Arjuna is now playing the role of one who is bewildered. It is not that Arjuna is ignorant. It is not that Arjuna does not know what is right and what is wrong. It is not that Arjuna is on the bodily platform. We are on the bodily platform. It is we who need direction in life. It is we who need to know that we are not this body but we are the soul. It is we who need to know that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But we need somebody to explain it to us. So here is that very important activity taking place. For all times to come, for eternity, a particular episode is being enacted between the Lord and his devotee, where Arjun is taking the role of a conditioned soul, one steeped in ignorance, one who is struggling in this world, one who is trying to understand the truth, and one who is trying to win in the struggle of life and trying to gain direction in his life as to where to go and what to do. Actually, if you see, 99% of the population of this world is directionless. That's why Prabhupada says we are living in a misdirected civilization. That is why so many things are happening where they are not accounted for. People do not know where to go. If this is the road and this is the path and this is the way to go, the direction is very clear. But when you don't know where to go, that means you are beating around the bush and you are wasting your time, energy and effort. That is what is happening to people in general. Therefore, it is necessary to read and understand this important piece of literature which is known as Bhagavad Gita. Swayam Padmana Pasya Mukhasya. The Lord Krishna is directly giving. It is coming to us straight from the horse's mouth, so to say. Straight from the horse's mouth. Without any deviation, without any ifs and buts, without any I think so, I said, I feel, no speculation, nothing. Clear cut. All that is required on our part is to accept it. All that we need is acceptance. And that needs humility. So, he calls him Partha, son of Pritha. So this is one aspect. This is the importance of this shloka. And then in the last shloka, the 26th shloka, which we are going to discuss today, this is more of description. There Arjun could see within the midst of the armies of both parties, his fathers, grandfathers, teachers, maternal uncles, brothers, sons, grandsons, friends, and also his fathers-in-law and well-wishers. Tatra pasyat sthitan partha pitruntha pitamahan acharyan matulan bhratran putran pautran sakhim stata shashusharan surudashchaiva senayor upayo senayor ubayorapi. In this particular verse, Srila Prabhupada provides the names of those Arjun saw. Actually, the names are not directly mentioned here, but Prabhupada has given it in his purpose. On the battlefield, Arjun could see all kinds of relatives. He could see persons like Bhurishrava, who was his father's contemporaries, grandfathers Bhishma and Somadatta, teachers like Dronacharya and Kripacharya, maternal uncles like Shalya and Shakuni, brothers like Duryodhan, sons like Lakshmana, friends like Ashwatthama, well-wishers like Kritavarma, etc. He could see also the armies which contained many of his friends. When you come to the point of friends, armies that contained many of his friends. Now, but where are the friends now? They are on the opposite side. Now the friends have become enemies. So a very important thing for us to understand in this world is, in the changing scenario of this world and the changing situations of this world, here things are never the same. They keep changing very fast. Today's friends are tomorrow's enemies. Tomorrow's enemies will become today's friends. So there is nothing static here. There is nothing stable here. But who is that one friend who is eternally your friend, who will never desert you? Bhoktaram yagya tapasa sarva loka maheshwaram suradam sarva bhutanam gyatva mam shanti marchati. That person is Krishna. He is the closest to you. As Paramatma, he resides within your very heart. And he understands, you don't have to speak to him in any language. He can catch the language of thought. You need not express in words. In fact, language has many disadvantages. Language can miscommunicate. Language can be used to be hypocritical. But when thoughts are concerned, there is no miscommunication, there is no hypocrisy. And Krishna takes straight the thoughts. He is situated right within the heart of the soul. So therefore, we can conclude, Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is our dearmost friend. And a little bit of message that we can draw from this particular verse is, the Lord is beyond logic and reasoning. Devotional service must also be rendered without calculation of profit or failure, simply as an offering of love. Material calculations do not fit into it. The Lord is transcendental, so are His activities. Disciple is empowered when he follows the instructions of his spiritual master. And that is what Arjun did. He simply followed the instructions of Krishna, and that was the reason of his victory. But before that, he acts the role of person who is bewildered, just for the benefit of all of us. Hare Krishna. Hare Bol. I think it is time up. Time was to wind up now. Hare Bol. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada.